Hi, my name's Ryan. I've been a supporter of Paul's for many years now. I wish to get the podcast and video creation part of the system we call Paul back up to full speed. And I think Patreon support is a big part of that system. Go over to patreon.com/Paul Wheaton. Make a pledge for each artifact that Paul creates. Again, the site is patreon.com/Paul Wheaton. You can also find the link in the podcast notes. Enjoy the podcast.
Okay. We're waiting for Mud to show up. He'll be here any moment now. But today we're going to talk about conventional wood stoves. So, or even efficient wood stoves, like modern wood stoves. But it's like not rocket mass heaters, but wood stoves. And the idea, this whole thing is supposed to be called a warmer home with half the wood. And I hope to see some people typing in the chatty chat to kind of get this going. But I do want to say that at the tippy top of the list of all the things, if you've got a wood stove and you're heating your home with wood, and I probably should touch on this many times over and over again, please stop operating your 75% efficient wood stove at 3% efficiency. And what I mean by that is that most people will put a big block of wood inside their stove, and then they'll turn the air intake down to almost nothing. So that way they'll have a slow burn through the night. So your slow burn will be a very inefficient burn. And to make matters even worse, if the fire goes out while you're asleep, then it's going to become a negative efficiency. You're going to be operating your wood stove at negative efficiency. So while the fire is out, then air is being pulled out of the room and going up the chimney. And so all your warm air that's inside your house is being taken out of the house outside. So I want to start there. Now, granted, the thing that everybody wants is to be warm in the morning. And I got to say, too, that when I've gone out on speaking gigs and I visit with the audience, that it seems like when I say, hey, who's heated their house with wood? A whole bunch of hands will go up. And I'll say, who has heated a home with wood for an entire winter with only wood? And then 3/4 of the hands go down. And so there's only a few people. So it turns out those other people are like, oh, I heat my home with only 2 cords of wood each year. But what they mean to say is that they heat their home with 2 cords of wood plus a whole bunch of something else. And so it's kind of like the key is that let's just talk about pure wood heat. And if you're heating with something else, you probably don't have to worry about this because you're going to be running the other kind of heat all night, so it doesn't matter. But for those of you that heat exclusively with wood, then when you try to have a fire while you're sleeping, I just don't think that's a good idea in general because if nothing else, what if you have a chimney fire and then suddenly in the middle of the night your house is on fire? And I tried to get some people to be in on this podcast that have experienced that, you know, and where they've experienced a chimney fire and they had to race outside and watch as their house burned to the ground. And it's kind of like, there's Mud. So, about damn time, you bastard. So, all right. The thing is, so step one, having a fire at night at all of any kind, I don't think is a good way to do it. It's like that should always be a giant red flag. So Julia is asking, so ways to be more efficient with the stove you already have. Yes, that's what we're going to talk about today. So for people who have a wood stove, whether it's a modern wood stove or a conventional wood stove, let's talk about how to get a lot more use, how to have a warmer home with half the wood. So, A, let's suppose that the temperature inside your house is currently 75, and you're going to go to bed. I wish to advocate that you close the air intake on your wood stove and simply go to bed. My guess is that you will wake up warmer than if you tried to have a fire going all night. And, you know, maybe a little trial and error will help out. But when you try to do a fire all night, not only are you doing a very inefficient burn, but the air intake is left open. So whatever heat you had in the house is getting sucked out through that air intake. And so you're going to wake up with a very cold house if you try to have a fire through the night. The next part is that, let's say you're going to cork it. You're going to go to bed. You're going to shut the dampers or the air intake completely off. It's going to be sealed. But we can make it even warmer for you in the morning. And that's going to be by placing mass around your wood stove. And so this could be nothing more than just rocks or bricks or something like that. Now, of course, the fanciest, most efficient way is to put a mass on top of the stove. Not every stove will facilitate that. But if you can do that, that's going to be very effective use of a mass. But you got to be careful to not put anything directly on top of the stove. So I recommend placing some angle iron on top of the edges of the stove. And then some more angle iron on that, and then you could put rocks, effectively mass, on that. So then those rocks are going to get to be very hot, and then they'll carry heat through the night. So if you have a fire just before bed, then it's going to those rocks will get heated up, and they'll continue releasing heat after you've gone to bed. Now, I've heard from people who have implemented a bunch of these strategies that we're going to talk about today, and they might go to bed at 75 and they wake up with 67. So they're doing pretty damn good. It's a pretty warm house to wake up to. Whereas I hear a lot of stories from people that go to bed at 75 and they're trying to do the fire while they sleep, and they wake up to a house that's like 45. So, Mud, I'm glad you're here. I wish you for you to now validate everything I just said. Ready, go. Just a thumbs up? That's all you got?
I got a thumb up for you. Yes. A thumb up. It's California. It's too early. But the original for what we think of as a wood stove was a fireplace, which was, and the original of that was a fire in the middle of the room with the smoke getting out however it could. And all of that was really inefficient, but it didn't matter so much in the southern parts of Europe where you're not going to freeze to death too quickly. But the original of a mass heater, was from, places like, Scandinavia, Finland, Russia, where if you go to bed and, you could wake up absolutely frozen, completely frozen to death, because it would get so cold at night. And they didn't have enough wood to keep a fire going all night, and they didn't have enough would even stay comfortable. So they'd build an enormous heater and have a bed on top of that, and you know, cover that with blankets and whatnot, and everybody climb in there and stay warm. And even when, you know, the unlucky person who had to get out of bed and fire that thing in the morning, would usually find that the bucket of water next to it was frozen. But that mass stayed warm, and the people sleeping on top of that mass stayed warm, with, relatively little fuel. And, there were two components to that. One being that, that storage, of heat, then, you know, being insulated and concentrated in one place. They weren't trying to keep the whole house warm. They were trying to keep the people warm and concentrate all that effort in one place where it made the most, sense, the most use. But also that mass, would take a long time to heat up in the first place, and the people feeding the fire would not be comfortable until that mass was fully charged. So they would keep feeding it. So all through the day, people be, coming by and dropping something, throwing something in that fire, and charging up the mass battery. One of the things we've run into in tiny houses that, will also, happen in your typical ranch house, is that, the heater, if it's oversized, we fire it up for a little while and we get super hot and we stop feeding it. So we stop warming the mass of the room, a long time before there's enough heat stored in it to keep us warm through the night. So having a mass that, that doesn't allow us much heat, much warmth in the room until it's fully charged, it encourages us to pay attention. And of course, when you're asleep, you're not paying attention. You've got the whole thing on cruise control. And if cruise control isn't very efficient, you know, cause you're not allowing enough air in, or you're letting too much air through and sucking all the warm air out of the house, well, then you not paying attention contributes to waking up cold.
So just to be clear, the stuff I've covered so far is never operate your 75% efficient wood stove at 3% efficiency or less. And the way to curb the or less is going to be whenever you don't have a fire going, the air intake should be shut off. So you have to, you know, when you get down to the end of the fire and the fire is out, you got to shut down the air intake. Because the air intake is going to make it so that if it's left open, then it's continuing to suck. Because this is how people heat their homes today, and they heat their people today, is with convective heat. So they've heated up this big air mass in their house, and then they move all of that air mass outside, and now they're cold again. And it's kind of like, okay, so you got to cork it. You got to shut off the air intake when you don't have an active fire.
And this is true even if you have the most current code requires an outside air intake for the combustion air of your wood stove. And so yeah, if you've got that, most of those don't have a gate on them to shut them, which I think is a little silly because, yes, it's not sucking air out of your house and sucking cold air into your house, but it is, but you've got a heat exchanger. That wood stove, is a heat exchanger. And if you're sucking cold air through it all through the night, it's sucking heat out of the house. Whether the air is coming into the house before it goes out of the house, or whether the air is just going through the combustion system. Being able to shut that down drastically reduces the amount of exposure to cold that you're going to get in the house overnight after the fuel is burned. And we shouldn't be, burning fuel at low efficiencies, damping down the fire and for any reason.
So Tim Norton asks, any creative ways to remember to close the air intake? So I wanna say that, yeah, here's a creative way, and that is that if you suck at remembering to close the air intake, then how about this? Just run a super hot fire really fast and sit there until the fire's done, and then shut it down. I mean, granted, every time I've ever run a conventional wood stove, I would get the fire going, go into the next room and do other things, and then come back around and restoke the fire, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm kind of thinking, like, it's true, the way that is the design of the stove kind of has this assumption that you're going to be turning the air intake off when the fire's out. You just happen to have fantastic human discipline. And it's like, if you maybe set a timer, like, okay, this probably ought to be done in 45 minutes. And so set a timer on your phone, which you have with you. And in 45 minutes, you're going to go back and shut it all down. So, but the other thing is, the only fire you should ever run is a super crazy hot fire that's roaring, and that's it. Nothing less than that.
My buddy Yanto handles this by designing his heaters so that if it starts to go out, it has insufficient draw to clear all the smoke into the chimney, so it starts smoking back into the room as it starts getting too cold to burn efficiently because you're not feeding it, and that's terrifying. So you can't fall asleep if you're terrified that you're gonna fill the room with smoke, and so people don't try to keep a fire going while they're going to sleep in his buildings, because as soon as you start to nod off and stop feeding it, it starts smoking back into the room. And I highly don't recommend that way of doing it. It's absolutely effective and a bad idea. Brilliant bad idea. I have almost zero of that thing called discipline. So, I like to put a piece, on that gate that shuts the air intake, that is removable. And if the gate is open, then let's say there's a brick, that comes out. I put that brick on my pillow, because I'm going to forget to close that damper. And then I'm suddenly going to remember as I lay my head down to rest, in a brutal fashion. And either I will get to a point where I remember before I lay down because I don't want to smack my head again, or I will smack my head again and get up and go and shut it. Either way, that requires, no discipline from me, and is more likely to therefore work.
So I want to quickly address the thing that you brought up, the external air intake. I feel like I can fill 2 hours bitching about external air intake.
Yep.
I think it's a really bad idea. I think that you really need to have the air intake for your wood stove, whatever kind of wood stove you're operating, be from the space where you are breathing all your halitosis, farting your farts, and general BO and other fouling of the general air, including the thing that each human being has this nasty habit of converting oxygen into carbon dioxide. I like the idea that there is some kind of contraption which will take that foul air outside and away, and it gets replaced with clean, fresh air. And so it's like if your technique does not clear the air, you're doing it wrong. So, but again, I've got like 2 hours to talk about down that road. That's a whole story for a different day, I think. I also think I got a video on YouTube that covers it pretty well.
The short version of my take on that is that enough newer houses are sealed well enough that you can have a wood stove actually snuff out the pilot light on your propane water heater, because there's not enough air coming in through the cracks and whatnot, in between your windows and your doors and so forth, to give enough air to supply both of those chimneys. Probably most of us don't live in a house that well sealed. But if you do live in a house that well sealed, it's really important to have each device have its own air intake, and if you're going to have insurance on the building, it's probably a good idea to have the air intakes at least nominally close to code. But if you live in an old farmhouse, adding extra breeze to the room, and then not having a way that the air gets out, just ends you up sitting in your own smell, and there's something to be said for that, for going away from that.
I think a modern home isn't going to have much concern in that space because, A, most modern homes have a massive buffet of air being passed through the living space. And so it's like those concerns are gone. The other thing is that when you have a slightly older home that's super sealed, you still have the vents for the bathrooms and the vent for the kitchen and the dryer vent as giant gaping holes to the outdoors. So generally, if you're going to run a wood stove, a conventional wood stove in your home, and the air intake comes from the living space, I think in general you're going to be okay. It's pretty rare to have things get to be so tight that there's going to be any kind of problem with pilot lights or anything like that. I want to say for this topic of external air intake, that is a rich, rich topic. But let's step around that for just a second, because today's topic is a warmer home with half the wood. And I think that the primary metric for a warmer home is, what is the temperature in the morning?
Hi, this is Mark. There are a lot of reasons to get angry these days, but I prefer to focus on the positive things that we each can do to make this world a better place. The book Building a Better World in Your Backyard, Instead of Being Angry at Bad Guys, is a great resource for just that. Instead of throwing my arms up in frustration at governments or big corporations, there's a list of ideas that we each can tackle to affect change. Information about this book and other resources can be found at permies.com.
So, now let's I want to kind of cruise through the list because my understanding is we don't have a lot of time with you today, so we're going to make
about 10 minutes. Yep.
Time that we have, and it's like first I want to say dry firewood. Now, granted, once in a while somebody who is desperate to heat their home ends up with something that ain't dry, and it's like, okay, I am never going to suggest that you dry anything or that you burn anything that's less than dry. I will never suggest that. However, what I will do is I can give you a list of things to do to try to dry that wood very, very quickly. So that way it'll then be dry enough to heat your home. But again, that's like a couple hours of stuff to talk about. So not today, but I am going to say having dry wood is critically important. I saw somebody once say something like, you can burn green wood in a conventional wood stove, but you can't burn green wood in a rocket mass heater. And it's like, what kind of fucking idiot are you? And it's like, I don't know of anybody who nobody should try to burn green wood in either, ever, ever, ever. That is a recipe for a chimney fire. And on top of that, even if you try it, it doesn't heat your home. It's just a mess. It's terrible. So
a large portion of the heat capacity of the wood goes into transforming the water in that wood into steam, which then you send out the chimney. It's, in addition to it being a horribly inefficient combustion process, it's horribly efficient in transfer process from transferring that heat from the exhaust into your building. And it causes chimney fires. So, the point of becoming desperate enough to burn green wood, we should throw all sorts of barriers in front of ourselves to not get to the point of being desperate enough to burn green wood or wet wood. If you're ordering wood from somebody, developing a relationship with them so that you know that you can trust that they're selling you seasoned wood when they say they're selling you seasoned wood is an important part of your relationships. I would absolutely spring for one of those little $20 Harbor Freight humidity testers for wood to just spot check is the stuff that's been sitting under the tarp in my yard actually drying in my yard, or is it just rotting and I'm gonna have it wet? But yeah, always green wood, always a hot clean fire is an efficient fire, and everything else is an accommodation to poor practices.
So you just said always green wood, but I think you meant always dry wood.
Yeah, always green wood is a bad idea. Yeah, sir.
Okay. All right. Julia is asking about angle iron. So like, let's say that I'm facing a wood stove here, and then back here is the chimney. And so I'm facing the door. I would say I would put two pieces of angle iron like this on the edges. And then I would put maybe five pieces of angle iron on top of those two pieces all the way back. Then I would place rocks on there that are big enough that they'll span two or three of those pieces of angle iron. So what you want is you don't want the rocks touching the top of the wood stove. And so, and I, there's a lot of reasons for that, and we'll set that aside for now. But let's just say that I hope that this answers your question. I do want to, as we're exploring the concept of a warmer home with half the wood, I feel like just between don't have a fire at night and add some mass, I think mission accomplished. I think right there we've accomplished what we're after, a warmer home with half the wood. but wait, there's more. I mean, so I kind of feel like, you know, some people, they could tune out right now, and if you'll just do those two things, you're going to have a warmer home with half the wood. But I think that another great thing is like, if you burn your pizza boxes and whatever the packaging is from that thing from Amazon and other paper wastes, and if you have a wood shop to take your scrap wood and put that in, does this count as your firewood? Because to me, when you're heating your home with half the wood, I'm thinking of stacked firewood that may or may not have been purchased. And so I kind of feel like there's a bunch of stuff that you can burn. I know that Ianto once told me about heating his home one year with nothing but junk mail. And so it's like, oh, so some junk mail. Okay, let's see. We've got Julia says, yes, so you've created a little airspace between the very hot top of the stove and the rocks. Yes. Yes. So the radiant heat that's on the top of the stove is going to shoot out and hit those rocks instead of hitting the ceiling. So the radiant heat coming off the top of your wood stove is currently, if there's nothing on it, it's currently just hitting the ceiling. Not doing you a lot of good. But if you set up this rack with rocks on it, then those rocks are going to get to be really hot. They're going to get to be like 200 to 300 degrees. And they will hold, the bigger the rock, the longer they will hold that heat. And now we could go into a conversation about, like, if you were to go in there with a bunch of cob or adobe and start kind of transforming your pile of rocks into like a sort of kind of giant rock that's all kind of glommed it together with cob, that'll hold the heat even longer. But that's another story for another day. The thing I'm trying to, okay, so back to this whole thing about all these other things that you can throw into your wood stove, a whole bunch of stuff. And in fact, you could have saved up your cardboardy bits and woody bits and whatnot through the summer and burn that for the fall or something like that and cut way back on the amount of wood that you burn. I know that this year I've been collecting boxes of woody debris that's near the front door of the house. So like if I go and I prune a tree, or if a tree fell over, or I've pruned some shrubs or whatever, anything that I find that is not going into the wood stack, I'm throwing into these boxes and I'm bringing it indoors where it gets nice and dry. And once it's nice and dry, I'll burn that with some cardboard. Because when I try to burn, first of all, the other thing is we get these cardboard boxes and we hack them up into little pieces and throw the pieces into another cardboard box. And we burn that very fast. But I found that when you get about 5 minutes into a cardboard burn, the wood feed, because I'm using a rocket mass heater, starts to plug up with ash because, you know, the cardboard leaves behind a lot of ash. So if I throw a few twigs in there from some kind of gardening project, that helps to break it up. And so I'll cycle back and forth between the cardboard and the handfuls of wood scraps, kind of a thing. Anything that doesn't stack well. So perfectly valid to do the exact same thing with a wood stove. For bonus fuels, Mud, I saw you wrote down nutshells. You get a lot of nutshells?
That's the same as that those little bits of stuff that you're picking up out of your yard. You know, anything that's got some mass to it, that's a dry carbon. And those nutshells are actually pretty dense. You know, throw some of that in there. But you know, not too much, cause that it's a little too easy to be putting out too much carbon and not enough air to burn it completely. So you start burning a little dirty, I know it's hard to feel bad about burning dirty if you're, if it's free fuel, but you know, that's still a, it's still making your neighbors sick downstream of you. One thing I wanted to mention, I got a run. We're building a straw bale house in Fresno. That uses a lot less fuel because it's got good insulation in the walls. I did want to mention, that, you know, maybe you're a renter, or maybe, you're just not in a position to be, retrofitting your house for better insulation or doing much, that's not reversible. But, even taping the doors shut, for rooms that you mainly use for storage, or where you're sleeping cooler, you don't need to be, staying at 70 degrees. There's a lot that we can do to use less fuel, just in, being aware of where, cold air gets into and warm air gets out of the house, and doing something about it. Our house itself doesn't care, what temperature it is. It's only us who need the warmth, other than, making sure your pipes don't freeze. So rooms that are mainly storage, you know, block off, tape the door shut. If you got an extra door, coming into your house that you hardly use, tape that shut. Build a little vestibule where you can store some firewood, and take your shoes off before you come in the house. And that thing will make a huge difference in how much cold air comes into the house. There's a bunch you can do to, you know, to passively, reduce the amount of heat you need to create. I just wanted to add that in, and then I got to run.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bud. So I'll keep trying to go on this, without Bud. So if you guys have any more questions, you can type them over in the chatty chat and we'll get to them. In the meantime, so Mud was talking about one thing on the list. So we've got two other big lists for house systems strategies. And I would say that the stuff he's talking about right now is from the list called Common Strategies You Probably Already Know. So having an enclosed front porch or an enclosed back porch. So enclosed porches around your door, so that way there's less cold air coming in and out of the house whenever you go through the door or even when the door is closed. But that's one I think a lot of people know. More insulation would be another one that a lot of people already know. Heavy winter curtains for all windows. Weather stripping is a common one. Handsome sweaters and fluffy slippers helps you to warm the people instead of the whole house. And then one of the things that Mud has written down here is cuddling. And he notes, dogs are less litigious than people. Important note. But I do think he makes a good point about how a lot of people feel very strongly that it just isn't a proper heat thing unless you can maintain the temperature in your bedroom to 70 degrees all night. And I kind of feel like that might be true for people who live in San Diego. I don't think that's true for people who live in Montana, and I think it's especially not true for people who heat their homes exclusively with wood. But I like the point that he's making, which is that if you have a room that's not being used or if there are no people in it, you don't need to get it as warm. And then for bedrooms and the like, I know that in my house, the temperature in the bedrooms is about 2 degrees cooler than the central room that has the heat in it. And so it's kind of like, and I'm okay with that. And then a lot of times I'm okay with the temperature in those other rooms being 5 degrees cooler, in which case I close the door. So if I want the door to be open, the temperature in the other room gets to be warmer. But it's a personal choice, and I think a lot of people who are talking about that, they just want to heat their home with a thermostat, and they're coming up with cheap excuses to not heat with wood. And we just recently put out a video talking about how expensive it is to heat your home with natural gas or any form of electric, including heat pumps, how incredibly expensive that has gotten. Then we talked about the incredible expense of pellet stoves. The only thing that hasn't had the price go up has been if you were to buy cordwood. That price seems to be holding steady, amazingly. And then, of course, there's the whole concept of if you can get it yourself. So uncommon strategies, wacky strategies, heating people more than the whole house. So a part of the list is instead of handsome sweaters, ugly sweaters. The best seating is near the heat source. I know I've done a lot about micro heaters. I know I've talked about it in my Better World book. I've got an article about it. We sometimes call it a heat bubble. But the idea is to have like 70 to 80 watts of micro heaters to heat a person instead of using something in the 3,000 watt range. And so when you use these micro heaters with people, a lot of times those people want to turn the thermostat down because they are so very, very warm. And then a lot of times you find that their comfort zone is when the thermostat for the house is turned down to 50. And that's dramatic savings on energy. Other weird strategies that we have is, we talked about mass, but there's also the idea of filling your home with lots of books or other kinds of mass, other things that are extremely heavy but are not there simply to be mass, such as rocks or bricks. Then another one is to use strategic fans. And you got to be careful, too, because a single fan in place that might blow air this way, it's creating a vacuum on this side, so the air tends to just go like this. And it's like that's not doing you a lot of good, so you might need to put a series of fans if fans is going to be the thing you try to do. I generally think that fans can be a bit of a mixed blessing. You want to be careful with how you might strategize the use of fans. One thing I think is important is to have lots of thermometers in the house, because you got to find out, are you cold or are you just a whiner? Another one that's a good heating the people thing is hot water bottles. It's amazing how a single hot water bottle that you put inside your bib overalls will warm you up dramatically in like a minute, 2 minutes. And they're so quick and easy to use. They are magical and wonderful if what you're trying to do is to be warmer with half the wood. A couple of weird things that we've been experimenting with here at my place the last few years is inside of our bathrooms, we're trying to use small dehumidifiers instead of using the bathroom fan. So if somebody takes a shower, you don't want that humid air to stay in there and hit cold walls and turn into mold issues. You want it out of there. So these little dehumidifiers are doing a really great job of pulling the moisture out of the air without us taking all of our convective heat outside. And inside the kitchen, we're doing a similar thing, but we're using air filters instead of using the kitchen fan. And then, of course, with the clothes dryer, we don't run the clothes dryer. We use a buffet of different kinds of clothes drying racks. A lot of them are on pulleys, so we can pull them up, and then all the clothes are up next to the ceiling. Let's see. And, of course, window quilts layered with high-quality shades. I mean, there's such a thing as a winter curtain, but And while it does a good job at what it's supposed to do, and a lot of people will use curtains over curtains over curtains, which is smart, I like the window quilt that kind of seals the whole window and casing, and that you'll have a couple of those accordion-style shades inside the windowsill. All right. Mud and I both are powerful advocates for rocket mass heaters, but once you get to the point that you're using your conventional wood stove or your modern wood stove very efficiently, you begin to get the idea of, like, I want to take it to the next step, which is a rocket mass heater. But for some people, it's like that rocket mass heater might be a ways off. I do want to point out that when Ernie Nerko would host a workshop, they would build a rocket mass heater in about 24 hours. And so it's possible to do. But if you're new to it, it's going to take you longer. But that's the primary impediment that a lot of people have. And then I was at an event recently and somebody said, well, I don't want to build it myself. I want somebody to build it for me. We do have a list of rocket mass heater builders at permies.com. And you can go to that list. And Uncle Mud's on that list. You know, talking about rocket mass heaters, that's a whole different conversation for a whole different day. Of course, we sell movies and all kinds of stuff. I think Mud and I wrote a book a couple years ago about rocket mass heater risers, and it seems to sell very well. And so that might be worth looking into. All right. Do we have any questions? Julia saying sleep experts agree that you sleep better in a cooler room. So I think that's it, though. Andres, are there any other questions that went by in the chatty chat that I missed that I should try to address right now? We good? All right.
We good.
Thanks, okay. Thanks, everybody. If you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about wood stoves, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.
Have you ever wondered whether a particular book was really good or just so-so, and if you could trust the reviews online? When it comes to books related to permaculture, Permies has a large list of reviews for over 100 books. Perhaps you're considering a book for yourself or a friend, or you're just curious about what's out there. Stop by permies.com/book and take a look at the book review grid and read some honest reviews, and hopefully you'll find the next book to add to your collection.